Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales slap in the face. A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true Sell or Diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die. Diehards, please help me welcome Chris.
I need to ask a big picture question. How has Amazon.com affected the way you rent a property, and have rents gone down in order to keep them filled?
So in general, I think Amazon has lit a fire under retail owners, right? We're definitely in the midst of disruption. I think the headline news is of e-commerce is really the tailwind. The reality is, I think Amazon buying Whole Foods, brick and mortar chain, opening stores, the reality is that you need multiple channels to sell. That's period, end of story. You can't just do one. If you look at pure play e-commerce tenants that are in growth mode today, not a lot of them are generating a profit. They can certainly gain market share, but it took Amazon a long time to really generate a profit and actually not just growing market share. Whereas a lot of the mature retailers that are publicly traded today are forced to make a profit because they're mature and they're not in growth mode. So they have that advantage where they can just go, you know, buy market share and not an unprofitable market share and then figure it out later. And a lot of e-commerce chains are still doing that. In order to make money, they're all opening. You know, I was just at a conference where there was over 1,000 digitally native brands that are opening up brick and mortar stores. UNTUCKit and Warby Parker and all these digitally native brands opening up brick and mortar stores. So, you know, is America overstored? Sure. It's, you know, there's certain pockets where there's too many stores. But I think the key is the following. There's really bucketed into two areas. You have the group that is the value-oriented segment. There's a lot of people out here who, in the world, who are still very focused on price. They either can't afford more or they don't want to spend more. And then you have the Amazon, which is really focused on convenience. And there's a premium to buy convenience. There's a significant amount of the population that doesn't want to pay for it, and there's a significant amount that can't pay for convenience. And so we play in the value game and the open air world. We're not in the enclosed world. And I think the guys who are challenged and what you're seeing today is the people in the middle who don't have a value proposition, aren't providing convenience. And I'm putting luxury in it. You know, Louis Vuitton, they're so niche in a different category. In traditional retail, you either provide a value proposition or you provide convenience. I think the guys in the middle are the ones who are hurting. And that's why you've seen a lot with the Macy's and the JCPenney's of the world, because are they really giving? If you can go to TJ Maxx and get the $90 polo for $30, they're losing on the value proposition. And it's, you know, it's not that convenient when I can go to Amazon and get it for in an hour.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this at you. I don't think Amazon bought Whole Foods as an investment as much as they did to buy it as a learning tool. They're
totally
learning.
I agree.
Okay, so what are you going to do when they put the Amazon bookstores in 250 of your centers? And what are you going to do when they put...
He'll be happy because they'll be paying him rent.
Yeah, but Barnes & Noble is going to go south for the winter. And Amazon bookstores are about a third of the size.
So there's definitely, in general, there's a, you know, at the moment, right, of all retail sales, 13% are e-commerce today. So 87% are still brick and mortar. That's clearly going in the direction of e-commerce. I think that the reality is, though, that people miss is that 50% of all e-commerce is Amazon. And so everybody else is fighting for the other 50%. So it's really not the internet versus brick and mortar or clicks and bricks. It's Amazon versus everybody else. Mm-hmm. That's really the discussion that we're not having. It's really Amazon versus everyone who's an e-commerce business, who's a brick and mortar business, who's a web services business. It's really Amazon. This, you just have this ginormous, unbelievable company who's growing. And so, I'm not going to pretend I can see the future and I know how it all shakes out. I can tell you, as a landlord, I'll take Amazon credit all day.
Right.
Yeah. 100%. However, when a company like UNTUCKit or Warby Parker comes into a retail center, now they have to learn, number one, that there's increased costs. That the reason they went online to begin with is because they didn't have the overhead of a retail store. And they're going to have to adjust everything from pricing to profit margins in order to be able to compete in the brick and mortar world. It's Motivation Monday.
The reason we're sharing that with you is not to show you what you could be doing with your kids, because you could be doing that.
That's true.
But it's to show you that because we, and if you're just joining us, we were at Outbound last week, and that was the video that Jeffrey used to introduce, to have it, Gabrielle introduce him on stage to 1,000 people at the sales conference. But the reason we're showing you this is because something really amazing happened after that video, besides Jeffrey's talk, of course, because his talk is always amazing. But Jeffrey, you got this note from
somebody came up to me and said, "How do you spell your daughter's name?" And I said, "Gabrielle." And he like does that. And then he goes, "Here." And he hands me this letter. And hold up letter. Okay, good.
Okay, it's a whole handwritten note. Dun, dun, dun. Oh.
Oh.
There we go. Look okay, how cool is that. Jeffrey's going to read it to you.
"Gabrielle, your video was funny and very well done," underlined. "You are lucky to have such a great opportunity to start young and be taught by great parents, Rich and Audrey." And the guy just handed me the letter. And I got compliments all day long about how great the kid was, not about how great I was, but that's a whole other issue. I think that this kind of thing, when I frame this and give it to Gabrielle, will be a booster for her confidence, for her ability to pull it off with an audience of 1,000 people. I mean, it's just, think about a kid, think about your kid, think about other people's kids. What do they do to maintain that confidence level? And I think that this is an opportunity. For me, it was absolutely phenomenal. I just wanted her to do it for the hell of it because it would be fun. She's done it for me a bunch of times, but never in a video like this that was produced and really well done. And she was in school anyway. But listen, here's the bottom line. This was remarkable. And it's something that happens at one of these conferences. Things happen at these conferences.
Yeah. And so Richard Fenton and Andrea Waltz, they wrote Go For No. And they're also sales speakers and trainers and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it made no difference to them. They didn't have to write something
right.
like that.
Exactly.
And so they did. And Gabrielle has no idea what kind of impact her video had. There were 1,000 people in that audience right. going crazy after that video. And she has no idea because she wasn't there. And obviously we can show her videos and that kind of thing. But a note like this is going to make it a defining moment for her for the rest of her life. And so I want to challenge you to think about what kind of defining moments you have. They might be from your childhood. They might be from your first years in selling. They may be from last week that you can think about that have really impacted your sales confidence so that you can use that sales confidence and selling confidence to keep building on it. And it's not just like one of those questions like, yeah, Jen, I have that. No, I want you to think about the exact moment because Gabrielle's going to look back at this letter that we're going to get framed and remember this and her ability to perform on camera forever.
Just remember that these defining moments are when major people say yes to you. And so every time someone in New York City that you're trying to pitch to get the fuck out of here. You just go into your briefcase and take out the letter, and you're going to be feeling fine. And
Exactly.
There's songs that go with that. There's all kinds of things that can help remind you of things. And I think as a salesperson, you tend to take defeat and not look for your victories.
Yeah.
And not think about your victory. You know, what was that time when I really shined? What was that time when that guy called up and he couldn't wait to buy? He couldn't wait to say yes. Those are the things that you have to carry with you for a long, long time.
I teach a lot of entrepreneurs how to sell in my Cash Flow to CEO program, and a lot of them are really good at their craft, but not the greatest at selling and need more sales self-confidence. And so one of the things I recommend is take something like that, or take a customer testimonial or something that is going to make you remember how great you are, and compile it all in one presentation. And so now you have the presentation of you, of how great you are. And anytime before you're going into a sales call, just present to yourself.
It doesn't have to be a sales call. I'm going to throw something at you. I had a medical issue and I had to go to get some treatment for a couple of weeks. And my buddy Glenn Bill gave me his University of Attitude sweatshirt, which I wore every day. And it reminded me to keep my attitude rolling. Mm-hmm. So I'm issuing a public thank you to Glenn Bill. I want you, Glenn, you can, you know, show this to your wife
Alex,
and your kids.
Let's tag him right at this section.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that I mean, for me personally, it was wonderful. I wore it every day. I actually had to have it washed once.
I thought it started to smell, but it was great.
I had to wash it, and it came back all sweet smelling.
It did. Yeah. They were great.
But thanks, Glenn. Totally thank you. The great Sean Finder.
Okay, so we have these 7 extra meetings a day-ish. What should they be closing out of those?
So that's a great question. So, you know, what we've recently done is obviously pre-qualifying them is very important. One thing originally when we launched about 15 months ago now, we were just taking on all demos. But now we got to kind of prioritize and pre-qualify, like how many users they have and stuff like that. But I would say with our product, they close, I would say we quote about 70% and then we close about 30% of that. So we would close out of every 10 demos, we're closing anywhere between 3 to 4, but we quote about 7 of every 10 demos we do on a daily basis.
So that's an additional like 12 to 16 new closes
sales
a week
month.
for a week for a salesperson.
Well, you have to.
That's huge.
The sales cycle depends. So if you go right in and you know you have the decision maker on the phone, sometimes it might take 2 for the data because the data is a lot more than just auto close. Sometimes you might get a sales manager on the phone. They say, "Well, I have to speak to my CEO," or a sales manager says, "You have to speak to the VP of sales." So you might have to do 2-3 demos, sometimes 4 it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we went after sales managers and you close one of them, that might be a 50-person sale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
I would say our average sales team, though, right now with our product is anywhere between 0 to 20. So it's not – we're trying to move up to that more SMB middle market. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet. So as we continue to add more data to our database, add more features, we should get there. But right now, you know, we have some clients that have 5 users. We had a client yesterday that signed up 26 on AutoClose. So – it does range, but we're more in the smaller right now, I guess, more small companies.
So when you launched AutoClose, you launched it with over 3,000 prospects who were ready to buy. What are some of the steps you took to get there?
So that was interesting. What I did was, because we had exchange leads running, 6 months before we even launched, or almost 8 months before we launched AutoClose, we built a landing page. And then what we did on the landing page is we kept getting emails, but we kept having people feel like they're part of us building AutoClose. So we would send out surveys and questions and ask our prospects or our email list, "Hey, what do you think? Hey, we just finished this part of the software. We want to show you." And we give 15, 20 second videos of what we're building. So it's like, building, buying a condo or buying a condo and watching them construct it and build it. We made our people feel like they're a part of it 8 months before we launched. And we actually did a launch day. We sent out all those people an email and they were so excited because they've been looking forward to 3 months, 6 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks. And when the launch day came, we had over 250, 300 calendars booked within the, and we only had 2 people at that time.
Wow.
So we had to, that was in November, I think, of 2017. And then we had to hire two people. I had actually two of my friends in Toronto to come in, learn the product in the boardroom, and then be able to do demos because we couldn't do all the demos that we had booked.
That's a problem everyone wants to have.
You're not kidding.
So I love that.
Do you also provide sales information on the site? So if I want to know how to ask a question, or if, you know, I'm selling automobiles, or I'm selling refrigerators, yep, or I'm selling new homes, or I'm, you know, whatever my product is, I'm selling auto parts, or do you provide me with sales information so that I can ask the right questions, or is that up to me?
So content wise, right now, we just built that feature that helps kind of like with the spam words and stuff. But inside the platform, there's like an FAQ where we actually used Go Video and Vidyard. And we did videos, about 35 videos 2 weeks ago for everything inside the software. So if you ever have a question on how to use the personalized video, for example, you can click on the video and watch a 10-second video. We also have intercom, which we use for our live support, etc. We have six people, you know, I think it's 12 to 14 hours a day. They're in Eastern Europe, so they're there in support, and they kind of walk you through how to connect your email, how to search the database. Any questions people have, they answer.
For our diehards who are selling over the phone, like your sales team, and trying to get these meetings and then give demos, what kind of obstacles do you see most happen? Like, do you see that sometimes people book a meeting and then they don't show? And if that's the case, how do you get them back to rebook, and what kinds of things do you do to really make sure they're going to show up?
That's very funny you asked that. Actually, yesterday I posted a big LinkedIn post on that, that exact same question, yesterday afternoon. So what we do in-house is we do get a lot of people that don't show. I would say we get about 30% that don't show, or they rebook and they reschedule. But what we've done is we've actually put them into an auto-close campaign. So we've built a campaign called Miss Demos. And as soon as somebody doesn't show up, we go into our mini CRM, we click on them, we put them through a campaign, and then every 48 hours, we're saying, we noticed you missed your demo, do you want to reschedule? And until they actually click on our Calendly to reschedule, they continue until they say, we don't want a demo, or we don't have the budget, etc. They continue to get those follow-ups. So it's all automated. We just push them in, and they get sent it all the time.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it, and you like the show, and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to gittimerlearningacademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher. And come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.